It's Golden Hour Adventure Time, featuring everyday people doing extraordinary things. From the peaks of victory to the valleys of defeat, these are their stories. Now, from the back of the pack, your hosts, Justin and Robbie.
Welcome to Golden Hour Adventures. Justin, guess what?
What's that?
We don't have a runner today.
I heard we do not have a runner today. This is going to be really exciting. I'm intrigued.
Today's guest is John Sroan. John is a podcaster, and he's an author. And I met John.
I think he might be our first author, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so you might be like our 80th or 85th interview we've done, and definitely the first author, at least that I know of. I mean, somebody might have hid the book from us, but...
Man, lying,
didn't want to talk about the book? Yeah,
sure.
John, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here.
So, John, I met you through... Dog's going a little crazy, sorry. We were on a podcast together through the glass. And it was a really good episode because it was something that I never thought about. You know, it was sobriety versus recovery. And, you know, I didn't really think about that. And as we were talking, my mind got turned, and then I was like, holy cow, these are two separate things. But I remember some of the stuff you were saying in the conversation we were talking about. And we were talking about still doing the things we want to do or we love in recovery, whereas some other thoughts or programs tell you should just stay away from anything that you could be, I hate to use this word, triggered by, to use whatever substance you're abusing. And I just remember that as like, I got to get John on because that was such a great conversation. So here we are. So, John, I want to hear about your podcast. Tell us about your podcast.
So I run Feel Free. It's a general wellness podcast. We talk about pretty much everything that has to do with living your best life, chasing your dreams. We talk about physical wellness, emotional wellness, mental wellness. Pretty much all types of wellness. I bring a lot of people on who have gone through some type of traumatic experience, but have come out on the other end a better person for it. And then sometimes I have people on and we just, you know, shoot the shit. But generally, it's a positive podcast, I'd like to view it as. And it's funny too. I'm cracking jokes. You know, if you can't laugh at your past, you know, maybe you haven't healed from it as much. So.
I like that.
Yeah. So it's definitely a good time. It comes out bi-weekly. It's available on all platforms. I'm sitting in my new studio right now that's not fully set up yet. So I will start having an in-person guests again. So I'm looking forward to that.
What made you want to start a podcast?
Honestly, I did it for the book. Because when I was originally going to be publishing the book, I'm like thinking, oh, do I get a traditional publishing gig? How the hell do I do that? And people are like, oh, if you want a traditional contract, you need to have a platform. I don't have a platform. You know, I've been very disdainful towards social media for my entire life. And I saw on a list on a blog or something like, oh, start a podcast and market the book. I'm like, all right, that's a good idea. And I actually had a lot of audio equipment from when I was an amateur rapper and music producer. So then I just started doing the podcast to sell the book. And then I realized that I liked doing the podcast entirely without the book. So that's why I kept going with that. And
I feel like we can't just skip over amateur rapper. Like,
yeah. Amateur rapper.
All right. So you got to do something for us. I mean, I know you got something just up there, like.
What, you mean spitting bars?
Yeah, let's hear some bars.
Spitting bars, realign the stars, got a heart sewn on the sleeve for the kids like me that want a dream, that want a fiend for something more than they could ever give. Now I'm trying to live Now I'm trying to hit shots from behind the arc like Curry. That's greatness. Don't worry. Your home squad want me wear their jersey, but I'm never in a hurry because I'm heading towards the heaven, never regretting, transcending, never letting anybody get me down. How about
Dang,
that?
That's awesome, dude.
I was actually first, just freestyling earlier today. First, that's why I had nice. That.
Yeah. First author, first rapper, man. What else can we get in this podcast?
I don't know. This is actually the first time like I've actually done that on a podcast too. Yes, and I say amateur, definitely amateur. I do have a couple songs on Apple Music and Spotify, but
just a humble flex there, you know, just a
just a little bit. Yeah, well, I mean, once we get a little bit into the we talk about the recovery and the substance abuse and stuff like that. In my earlier years of substance abuse, I had this dream of being a rapper, you know, and I was a rave kid and I've been writing poetry for a while. So I wanted, you know, I just wanted to be a rapper. And then I realized, you know, I can affect the world in more ways than just rap. So that's why I started being an author and doing the podcast and trying to put it all together into one nice little package.
Nice.
Well, since you mentioned recovery, let's talk about that journey. What led you down the line to decide this was enough?
Man, I had a few stints with getting sober, so I'd like to think that between the ages of 18 and 26 was active addiction for me. I had a 6-month span there where I was sober, but the rest of it, I was switching off. My first stint with drug abuse was more like rave culture drugs, so they were harder substances. I wasn't even drinking. And then my second time around was with alcohol and cocaine. And then finally, after 8 years, I'm lying on the floor in my studio apartment, which was just like a shithole to me, and I was just like lying in a pile of like my vomit the next morning, and I just like stood up and I was like, I can't keep going like this. I don't know what it is, but for the life of me, I am unable to moderate like other people. I can't just have one drink and that's it. So I just had to accept the fact that I'm different and I just can't do anything any longer. So I had to detox myself because I actually tried going to rehab a few years before that and an inpatient, and I was only there for 24 hours and my family was going through some financial struggles and they discharged me after a day. They're like, your parents' insurance can't cover it, so your parents are coming to pick you up. And that was when I got sober for the first time for 6 months. I had to like, you know, white knuckle it myself. But then I relapsed, and then, you know, years later, I had to white knuckle it again. But then I found a sober mentor and licensed therapist to help me through the first couple of years of my sobriety. So kind of a long-winded answer there, but...
No, perfect. Let's talk about the white knuckling it, because in the recovery world, you know, we talk about white knuckling a lot. But to some of the listeners, they probably don't understand what white knuckling it means. In sobriety or recovery.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a traditional 12-stepper. I actually have only been to maybe like 10 NA meetings and AA meetings in my entire life. I actually just recently started going in the last 5 weeks just to have a sense of community with other sober people. But when I was originally getting sober, the start of my recovery journey, I was not going to meetings. I had a terrible case of social anxiety, and I did not vibe too much with the NA or AA books, mostly because I had PTSD or traumatic experience with religion and upbringing with that. So I found a therapist who was also 27 years sober, who worked the program, who maybe, I don't even know this, but helped me through the steps without me knowing it, you know, in the 3 years that I saw him. But the white knuckling is definitely, I just had the resolve to change. I wasn't really ready to open up. Recovery is a long process, and I just had to keep telling myself every day that I need to chase my dreams, and I'm literally just going to bulldoze through anything that gets in my way. As long as I'm sober, I can do it. Unfortunately, that leads to burnout, which I've reached a few times, but you know, white knuckling can definitely tire you out for sure. So that's definitely what I've gone through.
Yeah, and my until I found, you know, a group, a community, I didn't know I was white knuckling, but I was definitely white knuckling. Same kind of thing, you know, you were talking about, like, just trying not to use. But then also, like, not knowing how to deal with anything in life. And, like, right. There was no growth there. It was just, like, constant every day, just beating yourself up, not being kind to yourself.
Yep.
Then once you, you know, I'm not in a program or anything either. I've known people in AA and kind of like you were talking about, I grew up in Utah and it was nothing but religion. And I had a very bad taste in my mouth about religion just because of the way I was when I was being raised, what religion was pushed onto me. So at a very young age, I just questioned religion because it was so heavily pushed. Then, you know, some other things were just the way they treated people. So I can kind of relate with that trauma of the religion. AA is very, I guess you could say, religion-based type. But some of the friends that I've known that have gone through it, they're just different people. They stop their use, then they just became a different person. We all become different people in recovery, but they didn't, and this is just me in my opinions, they just didn't have no sense of purpose after that. They were still white knuckling per se, but they were living off the 12-step program. They couldn't think for themselves. They really couldn't act for themselves. It was what their sponsor would tell them to do all the time. And it's just a different, if it keeps you sober and in recovery, that's cool. But just for me, it just didn't align with my thoughts.
Yeah, I can see that's actually where I was at too. I do have some friends in the program, and after meeting a lot of people, you know, if it works for them, that's great. It unfortunately wasn't able to work for me, so I had to find a different way. But I couldn't keep white knuckling, you know, because I needed to find some people that I could relate to, you know. And I've also noticed that in the white knuckling, my health takes a dive. Whether I'm working too many jobs to pay bills, student loans, you know, then I don't have energy to go work out or play basketball. And then I start eating pints of ice cream, binge watching movies, you know. Granted, I'm still like sober through all of this, but at the same time, you know, if you start white knuckling your emotions and your thoughts too much, then it just all blows up, you know. And that goes for people who use and people who are sober alike, you know. There needs to be a sense of community and vulnerability in order to get through that, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I found myself just that constant itch of trying to stay sober during the first 3 months. I would just do whatever just to get through every second, minute, hour of the day. And I just beat myself up, and like you're saying, it gets so hard, and it's unbearable. Like, then you meet a community and you're like, oh, there's so many other people that are going through the same shit I'm going through, and oh, there's ways to deal with this. And you know, whether you use or not, like learning our emotions and our feelings is huge. Like I read this book, Atlas of the Heart. I don't know if have you read that book, John?
I have not read that book.
It's by Brené Brown. It was very eye-opening. Like, I had all these, I thought I knew the definitions of these emotions. I had them backwards. Like envy and jealousy. I had those two mixed up, you know? Like, when people say they're jelly, I'm like, that's the wrong word. It's envious. Yeah. You know, I was like, I had these bunch of emotions, you know, mixed up, and, you know, like the main three emotions are what? Sad, glad, happy. Anger. Yeah. I think anger is in there too. And there's like 80 something different emotions. And if you don't know what you're feeling and why this emotion's there and how to deal with the emotion, trying to do that sober is much harder, because I know for myself, I used for 30 years to numb all those emotions because I didn't want to deal with them. Then when you have to deal with those emotions, buckle up, because it's not easy. It's like, where do you place this?
It's like a floodgate, honestly. You're like feeling life for the first time, and it's completely unfiltered, you know? It's a lot to handle. I wouldn't have been able to do it if I didn't have my mentor and therapist at the time, I'll be honest. Especially because, like, the withdrawals in the first, like, few weeks to months from the alcohol and cocaine, and then, you know, like you said, you're beating yourself up. You're literally thinking about everything you, like, screwed up in your life, and you can't forgive yourself, and, you know, you totally forget, like you said, you find a community of people that are going through the same thing as you. And, you know, for the first few years, I was a bit of a hermit, you know? I didn't want to come out from underneath my rock. I was ashamed of who I was, and, you know, now I'm coming up on almost 5 years sober, and it's, my confidence is returning. I'm able to go to groups. I can talk about what I've been through, and I'm really excited for that. So hopefully I can keep spreading that joy for other people, you know?
Yeah. Congrats on your almost 5 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I have a question. Like, you were talking about, you were like into rave drugs, then you slid into alcohol and cocaine. How did you go from like rave drugs into alcohol and cocaine?
Well, so I had drank in high school. I was like a typical jock in high school. And I smoked cigarettes. I was smoking cigarettes since I was like 13. I tried weed a few times in high school, but because my parents were extremely overprotective and overbearing, when I'd smoke weed, I'd get like paranoid. I'm like, they're going to find out, you know? So I wasn't really the biggest stoner then, you know? But when I went to college, I'm 3 hours away from home, you know, had free rein, got to do whatever I want, you know, going to raves, selling drugs, you know, living the life of a rock star, not actually being a rock star. So honestly, everything that I was getting my hands on, I'm like, to me, alcohol was probably one of the worst, I'll be honest. And that goes in terms of like the way it made you feel and the withdrawals and just like, whatever, you know. I had a lot more fun with the other things, but I ended up going into college 180 pounds. And then when I was admitted into outpatient a year and a half later, I was 130 pounds, you know. Mm-hmm. I was heavily addicted to Adderall and ecstasy. Just wanted to go fast, you know, like Ricky Bobby or something. And so the first like 3 years stint with that, it was all the rave culture drugs. And then I had my little stint where I was sober for 6 months. And then I started reintroducing drinking and smoking weed, because I'm like, I can do this. I can moderate. I can be like everybody else. And honestly, it worked for a year or two. I was on the dean's list at Grand Valley State. I was killing all of my chemistry and biology courses. Like, I was in some of the best shape of my life at that point. And then, you know, just a few things happen, you know, like you lose a friend who ODs, maybe a family member dies, and other things happen. And then you start, you know, just spiraling, right? But in this society, and I'll say this because my parents were part of this too, nobody batted an eye if you went and got wasted on the weekend. You know, like everybody wanted to point fingers and tell me you got to stop doing the drugs, you know, the acid, the ecstasy, and everybody was very adamant about that. And I'm like, all right, but if I work a job or go to school, I can get wasted or have a couple beers during the week, and people are like, ah, he's fine. His bills are paid. He's doing what he needs to do, you know, because it's beer. I can get it down the street. And that just spiraled. I'm like, I can literally go to the liquor store, crank out like a pint of whiskey, and nobody will even know it, you know? So that's, I did it the second time around. Was socially acceptable for me to get addicted to alcohol, you know, and I had a good connect for cocaine, and those two together is just, you know, an unfortunate match made in heaven. So I spiraled on the second time around, and that's actually what brought me to the point of wanting to get sober. So
at what point do you realize that you need to get sober?
I think once you start either having to lie about what you're doing to the people you love, when you start having monologues or discussions in your head with, you're trying to reason with yourself why it's good for you to always need to drink or always need to smoke, or like, if deep down you tell yourself like, I'm going to get it under control in the future, you're probably telling yourself that you might have an issue, because in the moment you're telling yourself there's an issue, right? And a lot of people don't realize that inner monologue, you know. I don't think everybody is as addicted to drugs and alcohol like me and my friends have been, but I think if people really like reflected on the binge drinking, especially because it's socially acceptable, right? You'll start to see different aspects of your life start to deteriorate. That's when you know you're addicted to something. And that could even be television, that could be fast food, that could be processed sugar, you know. It doesn't always have to be alcohol. You could definitely tell that you're addicted to something when you think about it a lot more than you should, I should
Dang,
say.
Dang, John, you just called me out with the fast food, TV, and sugar.
Dude, it's addictive, though. I do the
it's
same
like
shit.
Like a runner's dream.
Yeah, I just watched all three Lord of the Rings this past week and ate a pint of ice cream each time when I watched it, you know? So, you know, I'm not perfect, right? But dude, it's tough out here, man.
I was just thinking when you said that, I was like, man, I just eat sugar the whole time I'm running. Then I get fast food on the way home, and then I just sit on the couch for the rest of the day while I'm recovering. Man, just getting called out on my own podcast. What's going on?
Shit, my bad. You can call me out too. It's fine.
Wait till I come on your podcast. It's happening.
Sure. with that.
Yeah, John, I agree with what you were talking about. We tell ourselves a little story that it's okay.
Right.
But when we need to cope with something, our first thought is that substance. It doesn't matter. For me, it didn't matter what it was. Bad day at work, boredom, just angry at life, lonely. You could name it, and I would just go get high. Because why not? You know, took my mind off for a few seconds, and then the paranoia set in. Then all I was thinking about why I was thinking this way, and what did I do wrong through the day, and all that other stuff. Then just keep getting higher and higher until finally just pass out most of the time.
Right.
Then alcohol was a little weird for me. I'm an introvert, like to hang out by myself. So I have that social anxiety part too, where if I was going out to do something with other people, I would have to get drunk first just to feel okay. Just feel like I can go accept whatever I was going to do with the group of people. Then I'd start mixing the weed with the alcohol. Then I'd just play the game all night till I was so drunk. Then I lost all my inhibitions and just didn't care. Then the people pleasing came in, and like, I'm going to make everyone stay all night. You know, last call, I'm going to go buy everyone a round of drinks and make sure that they can't leave for another hour, because I'm here wasted and I'm going to make you hang out with me till we get kicked out of here or we go somewhere else. And that was my shame. Waking up the next day going, I wasted all this money and here I am all alone again. So I'm going to start getting high.
Right.
So that was my constant battle. And I would quit for a while. Then I'd open that door back up. And like, you know, once you open that door, you give yourself freedom. For a lot of us, I can moderate. I can't moderate. I'm the same as you. Full throttle.
Yep. I just can't have one.
Yep. Yeah. You know, there'd be times where I'm like, oh, I'm only going to have one beer. 10 beers later.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, I'm going to go home at 8. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm still not home, so.
Right.
What have you learned about yourself through recovery?
That I'm not perfect. Shit, man. I'm not perfect. I can't save the world if I can't save myself. Damn. I should love myself. That's what I've learned in recovery. I should friggin' love myself. I don't know why I ever stopped loving myself. I don't know why I let my own mind or maybe other people's opinions of me make me dislike myself so much that I did all of that. I don't regret my decisions, right? Even if they were bad, but I know that, you know, I'm not a piece of shit. I just made bad decisions, right? Everybody deserves forgiveness, and I might have PTSD towards religion, but I think forgiveness is a really important thing, even if you're not religious, even if you're not an addict. I think forgiving ourselves is huge in becoming who we're supposed to be. And I've realized in recovery that if I stay sober, then I know I can live my best life. And I'll keep learning about myself every day if I have to, you know?
Yeah, I was in a meeting last week, and for one thing, it's like to be proud of myself is super hard. Like to look where I've come. I don't see that. Like a lot of the stuff I've done have been like a physical challenge where I get to a finish line or whatever the ending point was. But in recovery, there is no finish line. It's a lifelong journey. And I was talking with someone else, and they go, you've used for 30 years. How do you think that you're going to wake up the next day and win this battle? And I was like, shit. This guy's got like 40 plus years of recovery under his belt. And he goes, it could take you 30 plus years to find out who you really are. And I was like, oh shit. He's like, I was taken back, and I was like, well, thank you for being so blunt about it. But he's like, with all my years under my belt, I learned something new about myself every day. He goes, the time you stop learning something new about yourself every day is the time you're going backwards. Be proud of yourself. Look at the things you've done. Look how far you've come. And if you have to remind yourself all the time, every day, that's okay. And I was like, thank you for saying that, because for a person like me that can sometimes be goal-driven, like, I'll see that end line and, like, I'll make it up that I need to get there for no reason. There's no reason to rush through this. It's just a journey I'm going to be on for the rest of my life. And I have to accept that. Like you're talking about forgiveness, forgive yourself is a huge one. And I think people not even that are struggling, just everyday people, suffer with this same type of stuff. I know as athletes, like if you miss a training day, like Justin, you probably hear this, like your athletes are, should I make it up the next day? And you have to tell them, well, what is making up today for yesterday going to do for the next day?
Nothing.
Nothing, right? Yeah. You know, well, I was, you know, scheduled to run 5 miles yesterday, and I'm scheduled to run 6, and I just run 11. No, just do what you're scheduled to do today. You don't lose any fitness in a day. And sometimes I have to remind myself, I don't really lose any recovery in a day, but I can set myself backwards. All right, enough about this recovery stuff. I'm sure you and John and I could go on about this for hours. It's easy when you're in recovery just to talk about it forever, because
Of course.
That's who we become. Like it's a different life. That's who we become.
Well, like we were talking in the beginning before we hit record, I was telling John, I was like, you know, we've had a couple you know, guests on that are in recovery that Robbie has connected with, and I love hearing everyone's story, but it's hard for me sometimes to relate because I don't struggle with that. And so I find that it's interesting hearing different people's perspectives, and you know, and you can always relate it's not the same, but you can always relate something in life to what, you know, somewhat of what you guys are experiencing. So, you know, somebody may have gone through something that's extremely traumatic that they're trying to recover from, and it may not be an addiction to something, but they may have had, you know, terminal cancer that they came out of. You know, it does happen, I guess, but I'm just making something up here because I don't know what to say, but you know, and you kind of get where I'm going with this. It's kind of hard for me to relate to you guys, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I don't, as you called me out earlier, I'm addicted to sugar and TV, but I don't struggle with an alcohol or a narcotic, you know, addiction. And so it's tough to kind of relate sometimes, I guess, but, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I enjoy hearing your story. So I appreciate it.
I was going to say that the ones Robbie and I dealt with were literally like deadly. Like we were faced with a decision. It's like, if we don't stop this, we're going to die, or something even worse is going to happen. With like the sugar and the TV, it's like, it's not a life or death situation. So it's not like that imposing of a threat at the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it does have like,
I didn't mean to make that comparison. That's not what I meant. I wasn't, oh, sure. I'm not comparing your guys' attention to sugar by any means. No, I'm not. I'm not downplaying that for sure.
Right.
I don't want you to get the wrong idea and be like, who the heck is this guy?
No, it's cool. I was actually trying to make the correlation. But one thing I am going to say, he's obviously not on here right now. So my brother is a huge inspiration. He's a professional runner. He's training for the Olympics. I think he just changed to train for the 800 meter. He's been training for the last 3 years or 4 years, ever since the start of COVID, to break the 4 minute mile. His 4 minute mile, or his mile time, is now down to 4 minutes and 6 seconds.
Oh, man.
And yeah, he's hauling
that's
ass.
6 seconds is, that's, oh my gosh.
It's crazy. And I'll keep this short. He's a huge inspiration to me. He was also an alcoholic, and not so much a drug addict as I was, but he dealt with his demons. He was a star athlete that didn't find his way out of college, and you know, he got addicted to eating Wingstopper, fast food, playing video games and booze, you know, and just living at my parents' house and had no direction. And to make this short, at the start of COVID, somebody bet him. They were like, you can't run a 5 minute mile. And he's sitting there, he goes, I could totally break a 5 minute mile. And everyone's like, you're out of your mind. And then my brother's like, okay, how long are you going to give me? And then everyone's like, we'll give you a month. Our buddy's like, I'll give you a month. I'll bet you a round of golf that you can't break a 5 minute mile in a month. You've literally been eating Wingstop and drinking beer for 7 years. There's no way you're going to do it. Right. He stops drinking. He stops smoking cigarettes. And he just like starts training for that month. We literally go to the college over here in Elmhurst, and this guy friggin' beats the 5 minute mile. It's on TikTok. It's got like 2 million views. He ran it in 4 minutes and 57 seconds. And from that point on, he's totally changed. Like his diet, his workout regimens, like everything who my brother is as a professional runner is completely different just because of a bet. It's the most insane thing. Wow. Yeah.
I need one of those bets.
Yeah. Honestly. Just a little nudge in the right direction, right?
Yeah. Put something on the line so I can work towards it.
Right.
It's not mine.
Sub 1400. You got a month.
Great. Dude, crazy.
I'll take that bet.
That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I'll take that bet.
Man. So, John, you're an author. Let's tell us about your book.
Yeah, so it's called Parables, Musings from an Addict on the Journey Toward Wholeness. It's a philosophical compilation of journal entries detailing my time in active addiction right before deciding to get sober, the initial stages of getting sober, and then a few years after that. And it talks a lot about addiction, but it also, it's kind of like my raw feelings and thoughts towards the inner dialogue in myself that, you know, that we talked about a little bit earlier, why I can't chase my dreams. Why am I addicted to these things? Why is the world putting me down? Why am I putting me down? And the themes displayed in the book, I'd like to think if you go from start to finish and at the end of it, you can be like, I can chase my dreams. Like, I'm not going to give you the answers on how to do that. I say that at the start of the book. I'm like, this is not a step-by-step self-help book. I don't have the perfect formula to fix your life. All I have is a bunch of things that I wrote during my time trying to figure out my own formula. And I hope that by people reading it, they're able to craft their own questions and answers for their own problems in life.
I've been reading your book. And it's the way it's wrote. It's very like like, not even gonna be able to try to say this word. Why can I never talk? I want to say the word, but I know I'm gonna mess it up.
Philosophical.
There you go. Thank you. Just as Justin had to read the hard part.
We finish each other's sandwiches. A couple Disney nerds will get that one.
Yeah, but it's super, like, I have a hard time reading very like science-based books or nothing that catches my interest, but the way you wrote this book, it's so easy to read and it's so easy to get the message out of it, and I'm really enjoying it. It's so cool how you wrote that book.
Damn, I appreciate that, because I've actually been afraid that it's a little too philosophical sometimes, but, you know, I tried to simplify it. As you can see in there, the way I've written it is, you could definitely see some of the poetic prose in there, like just the way I've written, because I've been writing poetry since I was 14 also. Like we said earlier, amateur rapper over here. I've got my bachelor's in philosophy. I also double majored in chemistry and biology. I'm very science based. And then there's just journaling and writing philosophy. So I've tried to put everything together into just little essays. You know, they're almost like I said, they're journal entries. But I wanted people to read it as if they were almost talking to themselves in their head as they wrote it. Like when I was like sitting there writing these things, I'm like, I'm going to read this in the future to myself is how I would write, you know? And then I read it 6 years later and I'm like, ah, shit. Yeah, that makes sense. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I get that from it. Cause when I do journal, it's kind of writing to myself to go back to read, you know, in the future, what I wrote in the past. And it's always kind of that type of writing. Like, you did a very good job with that. Now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh, now I get it.
I appreciate that.
And I heard you're writing a new book.
I am attempting a second book, yeah, right now, which is actually going to be on freedom. I think it's just going to be the philosophy of freedom. My thesis is that by using forgiveness, we can get through fear and failure in order to live a free life. And that's a very vague thing to say, but I think ultimately we all want to free ourselves from our burdens internally and externally. And I think forgiveness will allow us to trust ourselves. If I forgive myself for the mistakes I made in the past, then me in the present isn't going to look at past me in shame, right? And it's also not going to look at future me with anxiety. Like in the moment, I can be free to make these decisions no matter what and trust myself. And I think that's like the ultimate freedom here in 2024, especially over here in the United States, which is, you know, one of the most consumeristic places on the planet. You can get anything you want at any time, any type of stimulus, all day, every day, order this, order that, at all times. And to me, sometimes I feel like it's not the overwhelming amount of options that we have makes us think that we're free, but it's almost like I don't feel free. I feel constricted, right? I feel like I'm forced to buy and use and eat things like that. So that's kind of where the book's coming from. I'm trying to get free, honestly. So maybe I'll write a book on freedom.
Nice.
I like that. Something new I've been following is emotional sobriety. And it's pretty much just what you explained. It has nothing to do with a substance abuse or anything like that. It's being free of your emotions and being able to deal with your emotions. And I think it kind of goes along with what you're talking about, where we're overconsumed by everything in our country. Like any dopamine hit you want to get, you can have in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from your phone, from the food you eat, TV, whatever dopamine hit you need is right there available all the time. And I think about when life was much simpler, where back in the tribes where the goals of the day were food, water, and taking care of one another. And we've, as a society, have totally lost all that. It's more about gain and function. And we've lost all these like simple things that made us who we were back then. With technology, just not saying technology is bad, but it's just like, you know, I went to high school and we didn't have internet. So I told you how old I am, but I didn't get internet until I started going to college. And I remember sitting down, you know, in the college lab, and they're like, yeah, just get on there and you can ask questions. And I'm like, well, if I ever had questions, I had to go to the library. And you had to go through those, you know, the old, I can't remember what they call it, the little post-it note things you had to go through to find a book to tell you where it's at. Now we just ask Google everything. Now we have AI. Like, you don't even have to think really anymore for yourself to accomplish stuff. Like, just kind of my rant right there.
No, I totally agree. It's scary. It's technology has a lot of good things. It's also made things so efficient for us that we have too much time on our hands, I believe, aside from working our jobs. But, you know, we don't have to really acquire food and shelter and clothes and stuff like that. Most of everything we have is like I've been wearing the same friggin' clothes for 12 years. My fiance gives me shit about it. I'm like, whatever, you know, the shit works. I'm fine with it. I pay my rent. I've got a place to sleep. I'm very grateful for all the things I have. But then I have all this free time. And then, well, what do? Literally, entertainment is so, oh my God, it's so over the top right now. Literally, you can get entertained with anything. And that's, you can get drunk off entertainment, man, honestly, which, you know, I love video games. I play a lot of Nintendo, watch a lot of anime. So it's tough, man, honestly, but, you know, technology is good if it could be used correctly. We're just at this stage in our life right now as a society and humanity where we don't know what the hell's going on, honestly.
We're going to look back a few hundred years from now and go, what the hell was that TikTok?
You're going to talk about that. You remember that app that lasted for a decade and totally made people addicted to their phones?
Yeah, I mean, I think about MySpace. Like, in my early 20s, that was MySpace, you know. And then now we're Facebook. Now we're here and there. It's just like MySpace is forgotten. Like, you talk to kids now and they're like, what's MySpace?
Yeah.
And then you have to explain it to them. And I thought the coolest thing was be able to put like a little radio thing on there so you could play the music that you wanted them to hear when they went on your page.
All right. Yeah. I remember
I tried
that.
To go on to mine a couple years ago and I couldn't figure out how to get back into it. But I'm like, how cool would it have been just to log back into your MySpace and just see who were your top 8 friends and what music were you digging at that time?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Is it still there?
I think MySpace is a, It's still there. They tried to relaunch it. I could be just completely talking out of normal, but I think that Justin Timberlake purchased it and turned it into kind of like a music deal, but it never took off. I don't know if he still owns it or if it's still around, but I know like a couple years ago, five, six years ago, it was, yeah, it was Justin Timberlake, and it was supposed to be like a music thing. Like, I don't know, but yeah, it's, it obviously it didn't take off because it didn't come back. Remember Tom? He like he was everybody's friend.
Oh yeah, he was your first friend. I can still see the picture of him.
What a platform, though! Like, right? He gave you you could pick your top 10 friends. You could have music on there. You could redesign your entire page, and then we just shunned him.
Just went to went to Facebook then too.
To Facebook,
yeah. Which you could arguably do a lot less with Facebook than you could with MySpace.
Facebook is trash now.
Yeah,
I hate Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a big social media fan, not at all. But unfortunately, you got to promote yourself somehow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When do you think? Do you have a date projected to finish the book?
I have a lot of it written right now. I need to write a little bit more and outline some stuff to when it would be finished in a couple months to when it would get published maybe at the end of this year. I'm looking at I'd like it to be released before the start of 2025. But also with the podcast and, you know, normal adult human things getting in the way. I'm not a professional writer. A full-time writer, I should say, but I definitely want to have it out before the end of the year, for sure.
Cool. What kind of, I know you like basketball. What's your, is that your exercise of choice?
That is my go-to. I just love to hoop. I've been dunking for the last year now, so that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah, just doing different plyometrics, jumping rope, knee exercises, worried about my knee health. And then, even if I'm not playing fives, I'm always in the gym working on dribbling or shooting. It's cathartic for me. I just get to release, put my headphones in and just go shoot around for an hour, hour and a half, get a good sweat in, you know. I can't describe how great it is to have something like that. And I know you two have the same thing with running. It's like, something I know deep down that I want to get better at for absolutely no reason, just for the fact that I want to enjoy it. I'm like sitting there doing the same shot from 3 feet away from the basket for 5-10 minutes. And I'm like, damn, I just love shooting this frigging ball in the hoop. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I'm just going to keep doing it, you know? And It's crazy because I got really into it later in life. I actually stopped playing after sophomore year in high school because I was too busy smoking cigarettes and being out of shape. I was a baseball player in high school, though, so I was focused on playing baseball. And I didn't really start getting into playing basketball like this until 22, 23. And then when I got sober when I was 26, it really took off. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this a lot. So that's where I've been the last 4 or 5 years.
Do you play on a league or anything, or competitive?
I've played in a few men's leagues. Unfortunately, the teams I was on in the men's leagues were a year or two after COVID. I had a lot of my buddies on that team who had the COVID weight on them. And, you know, I've been in shape through COVID and my sobriety. But when you're losing by 20, 30 points a game because everyone's out of shape, I'm like, yeah, shit, you know, so it's just tough. So I'm not in a league right now. Actually, at the gym, I have been asked by a few people to be on their men's league team. So I am trying to shift around my schedule in order to make that happen. But right now, I'm just trying to play basketball, work on the book and podcast. You know, I would like to be on a men's league team, though, in the future, for sure.
So you're just going to the gym and working on your skills?
Yep. Just hooping. Love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Is that like, what kind of release do you find by doing that?
I I don't know how to explain it, but I just feel so free out there, just running around. Even if I'm playing, like, you know, there's a game called 21 or 32 where you play, it's like 1v1 against, you know, 4 or 5 people on the half court, or you're playing 3v3 or 5v5. Like, I don't know. I'm very competitive. And I think that was also what led to filling my time with substances, was because I didn't go on to play baseball or any sport into college. I didn't have anything to be competitive with, right? And I have this drive to want to win. So when I get in the gym to work on my shot or my dribbling, I know when I am able to play 5v5 or 3v3, I'm like, I want to be the best that I can be for no reason. I'm not going to the G League. I'm not going to the NBA. But I know that if I'm playing against people, that I'm going to give it 110%. And it just feels good to have my body at this point, you know, because they said earlier I was 130 pounds. I was a skeleton when I lost all the weight from the drugs. And when I was drinking a bunch of booze and eating burritos every day, I had a little, you know, chub on me too. But now, I don't know, I just feel like a basketball samurai hopping around on the court right now, you know? So it's just a good feeling.
That's cool. It's cool that you found, you know, something in basketball to keep you moving and all that other stuff.
Right. Do you two both train for races? I know you guys are runners. Do you guys race competitively?
That's funny.
Shit. My bad.
Yeah. Dang, just getting roasted left and right, Robbie. What's going on?
You need it.
I do. I guess I need to get humbled a little bit. No. Definitely 100% no. That's yeah, no. We're actually kind of opposite in that I race a lot, so I go to different races and barely survive and come in across the finish line, you know, an hour before they shut everything down. But I enjoy going and doing races, where Robbie's more of an adventure style runner. So doesn't race as much, but goes out and does like real long days out in the woods and the mountains, that type of stuff. So we're kind of opposite in that, but we both find the running to be real joyful and, you know, definitely both of our passions. So it's kind of cool how we mesh in that stance of things. But yeah, no, definitely not professionally. You know, I'm a Air Force firefighter, so that's my job. I don't, you know, I go out and train during the week and on the weekends, but I just do it as a hobby and something that is taking over my life. But it's fun. So I would consider myself, you know, mid to back of the pack type person. So
it's still a nice hobby to get into, though, and you're competing against yourself. I guess I shouldn't have said professionally. I should have just said competitively, because, you know, you said you do go to races and stuff, and that's huge. And shit, spending all day in the mountains running like Robbie is huge also. Damn.
Yeah.
That's yeah, awesome.
It's a race against yourself. That's what it is. It's like, you know, I always get asked, like, did you win? Like, no, I think I came in like 1,200th place, yeah, or something like that. But
a lot of the time it's
just for me.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you know, but we run like the ultra distance. So anything, you know, above a marathon is the ultra distance.
Sheesh.
And it's usually depending, you know, I like the mountainous courses. So, you know, long runs in the mountains. Justin likes that type of stuff too. 100 miles, 100K, 50 milers, oh, all those God. Different distances.
Jeez.
And for me, a lot of the time now, I did a bunch of races early on, but now it's me usually in the mountain. It's where I go to find my peace. It's kind of like, that's why I was interested in, like, you just go play basketball, work on your skills. For me, it's just to go out and be in nature and deal with whatever shit happens to me while I'm out there. You know, these 100-mile races, it depends on the course, but, you know, you could be out there 30, 36 hours, 48 hours on the course. Now with these 200-mile races, some of these cutoffs are over 100 hours. So you're out there for 5 days. You learn a lot about yourself when you get out there and do that shit. And you learn, I'm sure you learned a lot about yourself through basketball too. But for me, it's just getting out there in the middle of nowhere. And even like in the races, you know, Justin can speak to this. Sometimes you're out there all by yourself for hours, middle of nowhere, hoping you can make it to the next aid station before cutoff or run into someone. They put aid stations depending on the course, how far they are, but that's where we like to say the ultra buffet starts. They always have tons of food, candy, quesadillas, bacon, potatoes, you name it. It's just always buffets, so those are always nice to get to once you get to them, or you stay too long in them eating and hanging out.
I always say it's building character. So that's kind of my slogan, go build character, right? And so, you know, it may just be like today's run was supposed to be 16 miles and it ended up being 18 miles. And, you know, we're running on snowpack trail, but it was getting really kind of, when I say hot, it was getting upper 20s type, but the snow gets real sloshy at that temperature. And so, you know, we're having to slosh through this and go on overflow, you know, like frozen lakes and stuff like that, and rivers and creeks, and, you know, potential to get your feet wet and stuff like that. But that's all. And then my, through my expert planning of a trail run, I built about 1,000 foot of elevation gain in the last 2 miles. So after running for 16 miles, I did that. But, yeah, but you know, it's all like out there, like Robbie said, finding yourself, building character. And so through those 100-mile races that I do and that Robbie's done, you go through so many different emotions and different types of, you know, like there's fear of missing a cutoff. You're throwing up at mile 30. You're out there by yourself for hours and you're hallucinating. You know, they're just going through all kinds of different stuff. And so it's like, but all of it to me is building character. It's finding out what you're made of. And so that's why I like doing it. I just freaking love it, man. Like what kind of obstacle am I going to run through on this one?
That's me too. Now I get to hallucinate without drugs.
The hallucinations are real.
Yeah, I could say sure. The hallucinations while you're sober are much different than while you're on any substance.
God.
But, like, you know, when you drop a hit of acid, you know you may hallucinate or not. But during, you know, like a 100-mile race, you might not think about it. The next thing you know, you're hallucinating. So there's, like, no thought that I might hallucinate because I took the substance. It just happens. And they're, like, out-of-body experiences. That's the only way I can explain it, because we've talked about this a lot on the podcast because we've had a lot of people hallucinate. But they're random things, like seeing lights on the side of a hill and there's no light. Seeing Sasquatch or whatever you might see. Mountain lions, bears, people's in the trees.
I see crocodiles for some reason. I don't know why. Crocodiles or alligators. Like a log will be laid not across the Florida, trail or like in the woods. Well, it's not in Florida. It'll be in like Alaska. You know, there's a log laying across the trail and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's an alligator. No, definitely not. It's a log.
Yeah, that retinal fatigue is probably crazy, honestly. That's, yeah, I can only imagine. But you're pushing your limits, so that's why it's enjoyable too. You're getting that adrenaline, so you push through those hallucinations. You're like, wow, this shit's messed up, but I got to keep running.
Oh, it's not enjoyable when you're in the moment, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Well, John, we always ask our guests two questions at the end of the podcast. One is, what kind of gear you use? Since you like to play basketball, I mean, what kind of gear do you use for basketball?
So I use... Honestly, I do Under Armour compression shorts. I do, you know, just any Nike or Adidas basketball shorts. So those are always nice. I'm not too specific on the shirts I wear. I actually just take old white shirts and turn them into cutoffs, you know. I don't like sleeves because it messes up my shooting. I use Nike dry fit socks because they have kind of grips on the balls and the heels, because if I'm if I'm playing fives, I'll play for like, sometimes if I'll be at the gym for 3 hours running games, you know, and if I wear the wrong socks, like I just start sweating and I get blisters. So the Nike Dry Fit socks are really cool. And right now I've been wearing a lot of Steph Curry shoes. So I'm wearing Under Armour shoes right now. It's got really good grip. They're light, so I'm able to, you know, run really fast and break really fast. So a lot of different brands, I would say. Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas. So,
well, that's one thing we got in common, shoes.
Under Armour, nice. Yeah.
Well, we just talk about shoes a lot on this podcast. Ah. Since we're runners, but
right. I actually have Brooks too, because I do go on runs generally, and Brooks have been the best shoes I've worn over the last 4 years for biking or running, actually.
Well, Justin would like to hear that because he's a Brooks ambassador.
Nice. Yeah.
So the last question we always ask is, you know, we're trying to grow our platform here, is who's someone you know that we should have on the podcast?
My buddy, who was also on the Through the Glass Recovery podcast. I think he was on an episode or two before us. His name is Brandon Kachuk. He's my best friend from college. He's 14 months sober too, so he's in recovery. Last year, he finished his first Ironman, and he's totally changed his life. He's lost like almost 60, 70 pounds. Maybe it's even more now, and he's in the best shape of his life. I wouldn't be surprised if he's training for another Ironman. But yeah, definitely have him on. He likes running more than I do. That's for sure. So you can definitely talk to him about that.
Yeah, well, I'll have to reach out to him and get him to come on.
Nice.
John, we'll give you some time to sell your book, your podcast. People can follow you on social media. The floor is yours.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. I generally do most of my posting. That's at John Cerrone. Feel free podcast. You can find that on YouTube, Spotify, and all the other platforms. And then on Amazon, the book is called Parables, Musings from an Addict on the Journey Toward Wholeness by John Cerrone. Honestly, you can find all of those links on my Instagram. Like I said, that's where I do most of my posting. Give me a follow. Give me a share. Tell your friends, family, shit. Tell your grandma about me. Got some good content, funny content, and just want to help people chase the dream. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking your time and coming on and telling us your story. And it was good.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. Thanks for roasting me and humbling me a little bit. I appreciate that.
My bad. Appreciate you having me.